Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 86% of Americans say they think the country's headed in the wrong direction. Into the last hours of a huge election, John McCain and Barack Obama have each promised change. Here's Obama in Cleveland yesterday.
We've been through an 8-year storm, but a new day is dawning. Sunshine is on the way.
And McCain at a midnight rally in Miami that spilled into today.
If I'm elected president, I will fight to shake up Washington and take America in a new direction from my first day in office until my last. I'm not afraid of the fight. I'm ready for the fight.
The country faces enormous challenges. This hour On Point, on the last day before the vote, we sit down with two big thinkers to look at the candidates' promises of change and what they could mean for resetting the national direction. You can join the conversation broad stroke, big theme, what's the change you'd like to see? If you're in the 86% who say we're on the wrong course, how would you turn the wheel? Joining me now from Princeton, New Jersey is Robert George, conservative philosopher and professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University. He's director of Princeton's James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions. He's a member of President Bush's Bioethics Council and formerly sat on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. He's author of Embryo, A Defense of Human Life, and The Clash of Orthodoxies, Law, Religion, and Morality in Crisis. Professor Robert George, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Good to have you. And with us from New York City is Alan Brinkley, professor and provost at Columbia University and a preeminent historian of American liberalism. He has won the National Book Award and authored two widely used college textbooks on American history. He's author of Liberalism and Its Discontents and The End of Reform, New Deal Liberalism in Recession and War. Professor Brinkley, welcome back to On Point. Very good to have you here as well.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
Alan Brinkley, sit with us for a moment just on this readiness for change idea. Everybody cites the 86% of Americans who in the polls say we're on the wrong course. You've looked at a lot of American history, moments when pretty significant change in the national sort of compass setting did occur. Do you see, do you feel the country at one of those moments now?
Well, I think it's very possible that this is a moment in which there will be significant change. Both candidates are calling for it. The American people clearly are calling for it. The problem, of course, is what kind of change is feasible and what kind of change the two candidates would propose. And I don't think we've learned a lot from this campaign about what either candidate actually will do, although there are some fairly clear differences between them.
Well, let me ask you how you think they'd begin to plunge in. Robert George, we just heard John McCain there, as we've heard him many, many times, say that he would bring a new direction for this country. John McCain is not a cut-from-standard-cloth conservative. You know his history. You followed his campaign season. When you think about who this man is, the party he represents, and the realities he would face as president, what kind of change in direction would you anticipate, Robert George?
Well, Senator McCain's history shows that, as you say, he's not a standard-issue conservative, nor is he a standard-issue Republican. The tradition he identifies himself in is that of the reform tradition. He's a reform Republican. He identifies himself with Teddy Roosevelt, for example. So I would suspect that the kind of change that he intends to bring is the change that would drive the rascals out, the dishonorable people in government, the dishonorable people in business. McCain has lashed out against greed. He's lashed out against corruption. One of his signatures is his opposition to earmarks and to log-rolling politics. When McCain talks about change, that's what he means. And when he talks about taking on Washington, I think what he means is really getting after the rascals.
As a conservative observer, do you see that as significant change, as profound change? Do you see it as something a movement can be built around, or is this, you know, one man's leaning? And how does he act on it with the party he's got behind him, with the situation we've got in front of us?
Well, it's a very interesting question, and I can't say that I know the answer with any certainty. Certainly, the party itself has run into problems because it devolved into a party of the politics as usual. There was too much corruption. There were scandals. Business greed is associated in the public's mind with the Republican Party. So it's difficult to know whether one man, even with the force of personality and determination of McCain, can really do very much about it. But he's determined to do it. His record is one of fighting for that kind of change, but you're up against when you're fighting the establishment in that way, you're up against quite a formidable opponent. So, from a purely political scientist's point of view, one would be reluctant to predict success.
And Alan Brinkley, the last couple of months of financial collapse and economic fear have put us right back in your wheelhouse. People thinking about the Great Depression, the 1930s, FDR. You say it's not clear exactly what the change would be from Barack Obama, but do you see in the national mood, in Obama's instincts, in Obama's record, the possible makings of a kind of 100 days, a kind of FDR scale, ambition, intensity of change?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility, and Obama is the kind of politician whom you could imagine taking on that role. I mean, obviously, we hope that the current crisis doesn't reach the magnitude of the Great Depression, but it is an extraordinary moment, even if it doesn't do that. And so if you look back at Roosevelt in 1932, when he was running for president, he ran a much more cautious and conservative campaign than Obama has, mostly talking about balancing the budget. Sounding more like McCain actually than Obama, and yet when he became president, he having given very few clues of what he would do if elected, he became one of the most dynamic and innovative presidents in our history. Not everything he did was successful, but he was extraordinarily active and tried almost anything he could think of to solve the problems of the Depression. I think Obama, you know, might be that kind of president. I think we just don't know yet, nor would anyone have been able to predict that of Roosevelt at this time in the election cycle in 1932.
Did the dire facts of the Great Depression make that kind of sweeping, urgent change that FDR ended up championing more possible? Do you see Barack Obama having comparable circumstances in which he could, let's say, with Democratic gains on Capitol Hill and with the economic crisis we're facing, are there the makings there of a Democratic president to make that kind of sweeping change?
Well, a moment of crisis like this, which comes, thankfully, not very often in our history, is on the one hand a tremendous and daunting challenge for any new president. It's also a tremendous opportunity for either candidate, should they be elected. And when Roosevelt took office, he took office at the absolute nadir of the Great Depression, with 25% unemployment, not even close in our time, with the banks collapsing around him, so that the first thing he had to do was call a bank holiday for several days. It gave him, he really had no choice but to act boldly, but he did act boldly, and he acted for the most part effectively in those first days, and that's what cemented his position in the eyes of the American public as a dynamic and powerful leader who would bring change. And I think that whatever the new president does in his first few weeks is going to brand the entirety of his first term.
Robert George, do you see a way in which a President McCain could come out of the gates with that kind of big change agenda? He'll be up against a Democratic majority on Capitol Hill. Many in his own party are not fully behind his kind of track record of instincts and votes over the years. Can John McCain really deliver change?
Well, of course, he's not proposing to deliver change of the sort or on the scale that Obama is promising. I mean, McCain's not, promising that the oceans will recede, or that he'll heal the earth, or that that he'll bring in an era in which partisanship and division in the culture are transcending. He's proposing reform. He's proposing to get rid of corruption and drive out corruption in Washington, D.C., to get spending under control. So it's a more modest agenda than the sort of thing Obama has been proposing and talking about, although I agree with Professor Brinkley that, that Obama has not given us much in the way of details. So it seems to me realistic for McCain to have ambitions to do that, but it's a very, very tough job. The old-fashioned politics, the log rolling, the spending, the earmarking, these are ingrained parts of Washington politics. And it's not at all clear that anybody with sheer force, just by sheer force of personality and determination, is going to be able to deliver change, even in that more limited way. I don't mean to be entirely pessimistic. It might be that McCain will be able to pull it off. He'll certainly be able to make a dent. But whether he'll be able to deliver change that's fundamental, even when considered as reform change, that's just more speculative.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about change and the candidates, the word so often used by each candidate on the campaign trail this year, and what it means for each, for Obama, for McCain. My guests are Alan Brinkley, renowned historian, professor and provost at Columbia University, author of Liberalism and Its Discontents and many more. Robert George is with us from Princeton University, philosopher and professor of jurisprudence there, director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions, a conservative academic voice. I want to go straight to our listeners and then learn much more from Alan Brinkley and Robert George. Marion in Moore County, North Carolina. You're on the air, Marion.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling because, as you know, North Carolina is a swing state.
Yes.
And as of yesterday, when early voting concluded, 2.5 million votes had been cast.
Wow.
And in 2000, that's a big change because in 2004, a total of 2.4 million voted in the election total. So
you've exceeded that already just in early voting. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
That
is
amazing.
Totally amazing. Yeah. And so I wanted to talk about that big change. And also, as a Democrat, I'm very encouraged by the figures because 52% of those who voted are Democrats and 30% are Republicans. Of course, we know that not all Democrats will vote for Obama necessarily, but I hope so.
You're rooting for him. Let me ask you, Marion, if you could put it in a nutshell, what's the change you want then from apparently your candidate, Barack Obama?
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, number one for me is that, to end the war in Iraq. I mean, he was, Senator Obama had so much wisdom, his extraordinary intelligence and wisdom, it's so refreshing. And so number one for me would be to, end the war in Iraq and send additional forces to Afghanistan, which I totally agree with him. And then, of course, the economy. I believe that currently in North Carolina, I believe we're now at 7% unemployment. Every day on the news, hundreds and thousands of people are losing their jobs here. And, it's just a tremendous concern. I really, as a woman, I'm an older white woman, and I resent the spin, truthfully, that the McCain campaign tries to put on, like the group I'm in, that we're going to be voting for McCain-Palin, and that has really turned me against them. But I just think Barack Obama has run the most positive campaign in memory. I've been following politics for 50 years, and, I just think, his optimism and his vision, his intention, he just, to me, is the transformational candidate that we need.
Marion, thanks very much for calling. Robert George, let me put that to you. And first, with our caller from North Carolina's point about participation, enormous turnout there even before the voting has begun, more than voted in the last election. Participation itself, Paul Krugman today is, of course, he's a progressive liberal, but he's poking at the Republicans and saying the GOP is retreating. It's become a kind of rump party, a party of intolerance against participation. Can we have change and not embrace that participation? Is the bigger participation in the democracy, Robert George, now become a Democratic Party hallmark?
I think that greater participation is going to benefit the Democrats this time. It has benefited the Republicans in the past. That the benefits of participation don't accrue to just one party or the other. It all depends on the circumstances of the particular period or election year. But there's no doubt that the health of democracy is enhanced by voter participation. That's the point of the whole thing, to get as many citizens to participate in the process as possible. Now, of course, we want our citizens to be informed citizens, so we need to work on that across the board. More people participating, the better.
Do you see a Republican Party led by a President McCain as being open to that, or kind of circling the wagons, as Paul Krugman is forecasting or seeing already?
I'm not sure that I understand the question. I mean, if President McCain is elected in a year when there's a very high, if John McCain, I should say, is elected mm-hmm. president in a year when there's a very high voter turnout, it seems to me that would give him very good reason not to fear increased participation.
Alan Brinkley, what about the issue of who's going to the polls and what it says about what's ahead for this country? Of course, as Robert George says, turnout can come from either direction. It's maybe seems so far this year to be coming from Obama's. Does that make greater change possible, and does it differentiate the parties as kind of open and closed?
Well, I'm not sure I would say that one is open and one is closed. I think it's very clear that Barack Obama has mobilized a very large group of voters who might not have participated in an election and are turning out this year because of his campaign. But I certainly wouldn't rule out the possibility that lots of Republicans are being mobilized as well, at least in some parts of the country. We don't really know. I think, on the whole, the evidence is that there will be a much larger turnout in this election than in most recent elections, and that probably will help Obama more than it will help McCain. But Robert is right that it's not always the case that big turnouts can also help Republicans in other years. I want to say just a word mm-hmm. about about McCain and his capacity to be an agent of change. And I think if you look at McCain's campaign, you know, in the summer, which was not being very well run and it was sort of clumsy, but the message in the summer was a very different message from the message we've been getting in September and October. It was a message that really was very much like Obama's, and he talked a lot about environment and economic growth, and it was a very, you know, sort of centrist, hopeful, upbeat campaign, poorly run, but compelling. And then sort of at the time of and just after the convention, I felt the campaign changed into a much more angry and negative campaign and a much more conservative campaign that seems effectively to have mobilized the Republicans' base but has also alienated a lot of people in the center who might have voted for him. So, you know, if we think about what kind of president McCain will be, you have to ask which McCain is going to show up on January 20th if he's elected. Is it the McCain that we used to think he was, which is a maverick, a person who walks across the mm-hmm. aisles, or is it this sort of angry and at times somewhat ugly candidate that we've seen in the last month or two?
Robert George, what about that McCain who's emerged at the convention, perhaps and since, at least in Alan Brinkley's eye? Have you seen the same thing? And do you think, does the Republican base want change? What kind of change would they want?
Well, I don't see it as Alan does, and I think this might be a question of people viewing things from where they sit. You know, as a liberal, Alan sees things one way and perceives things one way, and as a conservative, I see things another way. I don't see the two McCains. I don't see the McCain campaign as especially angry, or certainly not as as ugly.
Have you seen the footage from the rallies? You've heard the chants?
Sure. I have, and I can understand why, from a liberal perspective, it seems as though the McCain campaign is really different from the Obama campaign. But seen from a different perspective, when you see the attacks on Palin, when you read what's on the Daily Cause, on MoveOn.org, the language that's used, the attacks of people that are at least loosely affiliated with the Obama campaign, even calling, in one case, a comedian calling for, I don't think she was formally in any way affiliated, but comedian calling for Sarah Palin to be raped. I could go on and on, but, you know, I won't, because, you know, we can play this tit-for-tat game all day, and, you know, I know what the audience for National Public Radio, by and large, will be, so I know who they're going to side with and what their perceptions are going to be like, but I just don't think that's productive. I would just make the point that I understand why Alan sees things the way he does. I don't.
But go to the question of conservative ideology and the moment the country is in. If the 86% of Americans want to change in direction, how do you see conservatism as situated or not to respond to that? What would a conservative change be when we've just come through a period dominated in no small part by some pretty prominent conservatives, including in the White House?
Oh, well, of course, there's been huge disappointment among conservatives at the Bush administration and at the Republican Congress. The perception among conservatives is that the Reagan idea, small government, controlled spending, economic policies designed for economic growth have really been betrayed, that Bush has turned out to be a big government moderate rather than really a Reagan conservative. So there's a lot of disaffection in the conservative movement with that, and the change they would like to see is change that goes back in the direction of Reaganism. Now, that's not what John McCain promised to deliver. He did say that he was a foot soldier in the Reagan Revolution. He's tried to appeal to the mantle of Reagan, but all those aisle-crossing experiences that you talk about and that liberals see as the John McCain they used to love did not sit well with Republicans, especially his support for so-called campaign finance reform, which really deeply alienated a lot of conservatives. I think the part of the McCain proposal for change that conservatives do resonate to is the reform agenda. It's getting after the rascals. It's ending the earmarking, ending the log rolling, combating corruption in a serious way, not only in the Democratic Party, but also in the Republican Party, where there's been just far too much of it from any conservative's point of view.
But is there a deeper critique beyond the dissatisfaction with what's seen as, corruption or sort of ethical failings? If you look at the core structure of the Reagan vision of tax cuts and less regulation and smaller government, is there a case after where we see the economy now that that's the change that can deliver what the country wants, or is there now a track record that says it hasn't?
Well, I wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, I think it's too early to say. Certainly the strict libertarian position that there should be no regulation of government, which was not, no regulation of the economy, which was not Reagan's view, the strict libertarian position, I think, is hard to sustain, and most conservatives don't hold it. But that's different from the view that says government should be small but strong. There should be regulation, for example, regulation that might have prevented what happened with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And of course, McCain says that he had proposed and supported that regulation all along. But that's different from saying, well, because of this economic catastrophe, we now should rush to the idea that there should be very big government regulation, extensive regulation of the economy, government ownership of banks or partial ownership of banks or direction of banks and so forth.
Which you've already got under President Bush.
And for which many conservatives are, of course, alienated.
Alan Brinkley, what about in the other direction? Do you see a potential swing of the pendulum toward a more liberal view of government, a public ready for a larger role by government, or is this, as many have said in recent decades, fundamentally a center-right country that even now would resist that?
Well, after the 8 years of the Bush administration, I think either candidate would have produced a more liberal government than we've had since 2000. But I do think that Obama will certainly be a more liberal president than President Bush was, or than you know any recent Republican has been. And maybe because he'll have probably have more leverage with the Congress than Clinton had, maybe he'll also be able to pursue a more aggressively liberal agenda. Although I don't see Obama as an aggressive liberal. In the primary campaign he was on most issues somewhat to the right of Hillary. So he's not a representative of the extreme left wing, if there is such a thing, of the Democratic Party. I mean, if there is such a thing that could produce a presidential candidate.
So does that put him in the less aggressive reformist category that McCain's in? His strategist David Axelrod told Newsweek the other day, I think right now people are in a pragmatic mood, not an ideological mood. Does that make Obama also a let's fix it around the edges reformer or something else?
Well, I think he's a pragmatist, but on the other hand, I mean, there is a very basic difference in economic thinking between most Democrats and many Republicans, and it's, you know, I think both candidates would agree that there needs to be more regulation of the financial markets, I'm sure there would be disagreements about how much, but I think everybody seems to agree now that there needs to be more regulation of the financial markets. That's not really the big difference between the two parties. The big difference between the two parties is what drives the economy, what makes the economy grow and prosper. Is it great wealth at the top that produces investment, or is it the capacity of ordinary people to spend, and that's an old, long time old debate in economic policy and in economic science. Is the economy driven by investment, or is it driven by consumption? And what Obama is arguing is for some of both, but he puts much more emphasis than any Republicans of recent time have done in getting more money into the hands of middle-class people. And that's a fundamental economic difference. That's probably the biggest difference between the two candidates, at least on domestic policy. There are also big differences in foreign policy, I think. But that if you want a fundamental difference between McCain and Obama, that's it to me.
Robert George, does trickle-down still count as change? Can it deliver?
I wouldn't use the language of trickle down, which has become pejorative. Conservative economic philosophy is much more complicated than that. But the idea, certainly, of getting more money into the hands of families, enabling them to make decisions for themselves about how their money is spent, less of it going to the government, and the idea of using economic growth as a mechanism of social mobility, those are ideas that conservatives resonate to. So it might be that there's some room, if Obama does turn out to be more pragmatic than many of his supporters on the left hope he will be, that there is some room for him to gain some support among conservatives. We'll have to see if these so-called middle-class tax cuts really do turn out to be middle-class tax cuts, where they really do end up putting money into the hands of families so that they have more autonomy and authority.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're talking this hour about change and the candidates. Two outlooks, two worldviews, and the choice facing voters tomorrow with two big thinkers from the right and left. Alan Brinkley joins us from New York City, renowned historian of American liberalism, professor and provost at Columbia University. Robert George joins us from Princeton. He's director of Princeton's James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions, conservative thinker and philosopher there. Let's take a call from Anne in Wayland, Massachusetts. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The thing that I would really like to see changed by the next administration is this whole subject of the income disparity that's been developing for the last 20 to 30 years. You keep hearing these phrases that the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class is getting squeezed. And I decided I'd finally, you know, sit down and look at some real data on this.
Mm.
And I pulled up some data on a website, thetaxfoundation.com,
mm-hmm.
and looked at the adjusted gross incomes. They have great charts there. Adjusted gross incomes of all these different groups of the population and how these income levels have changed over the last almost 30 years. And the data is really shocking. I would encourage everybody to actually go and look at the data because it's showing that basically the top 1% of the country has gained over the last 20 years about 80% of the total income pie available to the country. And the bottom three-quarters of wage earners and income people in the country are down about 20% of their share of the pie. And this doesn't even include what we're all paying in increased health care expenses, educational expenses,
yep.
all those issues. And, you know, the thing is, the candidates talk about tax policies to help the middle class with this, but I don't really think the root of the problem is the taxes. The root of the problem is how much our wages have gone down in, you know, the bottom 90% of this country.
And let us pick it up, and thank you very much for your call. Robert George, first to you, as a conservative, how do you look at the concentration of wealth and income that's grown in the last few decades, since Ronald Reagan, maybe a bit before? Is that a problem? And when, at this point, given that great concentration, when Obama uses the spread the wealth phrase with Joe the Plumber, is that a problem for you?
Well, it depends on what Senator Obama means. Now, he says that he's not in favor of wealth redistribution. That's not what he was talking about. He also says that he doesn't believe that there is just a static pie, with the only question being how mm-hmm. much is allocated to whom. So going forward that far, he seems to agree with conservatives. I don't see income inequality as itself a problem. I see the problem being when incomes are too low and when the disparities of wealth create opportunities for exploitation.
Do you think we've reached that point from your conservative vantage?
No, I don't think that we have, although I do think that we need economic policies that will stimulate growth and that will, in particular, empower families to have more authority and more autonomy, with government taking less from them, with government putting into place and carrying out policies that will increase social mobility, which is, I think, which should be one of the primary goals.
But you know, the real incomes have been static for a long time for an awful lot of people, and many others. Of course, you know the numbers on the concentration of
yeah.
income and wealth. What would be too much concentration to your point of view then, when it begins to become a problem for a democratic country and for the economy itself?
Yeah, when people are losing real earning power and when this makes possible exploitation of some people by others. But this is complicated. It's not even – you can't even explain it entirely in terms of economic policy. If you look at the work by the economist Diana Ferschgott-Roth on cultural factors and the impact of cultural developments on income disparities and wealth disparities, you see that this is a very, very complicated problem and one that doesn't fall neatly into categories mm-hmm. of conservative and liberal in every respect.
Alan Brinkley, what's your assessment? Have we reached a point at which the concentration of wealth and income hurts the country economically, politically, in terms of the health of its democracy? Do you think Americans are ready to see a government that would take action to encourage a shift, a realignment there?
Well, I think income inequality has been hurting the country for a very long time. We had fairly even growth among the economic quintiles, as you know, economists call them, from the beginning of the 50s until 1973. And there was not equality, certainly, but there was a kind of consistency in the growth from the bottom of the ladder to the top. And then in 1973, the growth started to spread, and the top 10%, and especially the top 1%, began to skyrocket, and everybody else either flattened or started to decline. And that's a problem, I think, for notions of justice, but it's also a problem for how the economy actually performs. This is not the result of any particular policy decision, although many policy decisions have contributed to this. This is a problem that's occurring all over the world. And the question to me is, do we undertake an economic policy that pushes against this inequality, even though the possibility of overcoming it entirely is virtually impossible and probably not desirable, mm-hmm. or do we take steps that actually worsens the inequality, which is what I think the Bush tax policy has done in the last 8 years. No one's going to be able to create income equality.
No one's proposing.
And no one should. But we should do what we can, I think, to make it less severe. And that's what I don't hear clearly from the McCain campaign. And we do hear something from the Obama campaign along those lines, although not terribly specific.
Let's go to Greenwich, Rhode Island, and Cliff. Cliff, you're on the air.
I'm asking a question in regards to the two different fiscal policies regarding McCain and Obama.
Okay.
McCain wants to give big business a tax break, which, from what I understand, I work for a large company, and they could use that money for research, design, and implementation of new products and services for the everyday consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Obama would say, well, let's hit them with a little more of a tax levy and spread that around, or give everyone else in the middle class a tax break, which is probably about $1,000 a year.
Mm.
How is that really, that $1,000, going to stimulate the economy? Because what we're really going to use it for is just paying off a couple of bills and nothing more, but it's going to hurt big business so that I just get the feeling that it would hurt them more so that they wouldn't reinvest in their public. So how would that really that stimulate the economy? I'm just trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, Cliff, let us pick it up. Ellen Brinkley, let me come first to you on where the brakes may be aimed. John McCain talks about reducing the corporate income tax. Cliff says his company could put that to work. If it goes to the middle class, does that result in a concentrated kind of investment that really pulls the country's economy out of the ditch? Or are we talking, whether McCain or Obama, about much bigger investments in the country's infrastructure that go beyond the middle class tax breaks or corporate tax breaks, Alan?
Well, I think in a period like this, when we have this desperate financial crisis, probably isn't wise to raise anybody's taxes. But on the other hand, the government has to be able to function, and the revenues into the government are becoming so inadequate to its responsibilities that some money has to come from somewhere. We can't take it from lower class and middle class people. They're already strapped, and there have been tremendous tax cuts in the last 8 years after a period of tremendous economic growth with somewhat higher taxes. So I just don't see the argument that there are plenty of examples of tax cuts for middle-class people that have effectively stimulated the economy. 1962 is a good example. And in fact, even in the Nixon administration, there were tax cuts for middle-class people that were successful. I wouldn't want to see business penalized to the point where they can't invest, but money has to come from somewhere. And it has to come from where the money is, which is at the top.
Robert George, has been talk, even among conservative columnists like David Brooks, about major investment in national infrastructure to restart the American economy for this century. What about John McCain and that kind of Keynesian view of the economy and of the country's infrastructure needs now? Nobody seems to think that cutting earmarks is going to get anywhere near balancing the budget. But what about bigger investments in this country? Do you see McCain as seeing those entirely or overwhelmingly coming from the private sector, or is there a Keynesian at work in John McCain?
McCain doesn't have a strongly ideological position on economic matters one way or the other. He's genuinely a moderate. He's not a libertarian. He's not a disciple of Milton Friedman. But on the other hand, he's not a disciple of John Maynard Keynes. I suspect that his view is that government should do what it does well and avoid what it doesn't do well. It should avoid trying to manipulate the economy in order to redistribute wealth or to try to reach some idealized centralized view of what a proper distribution of wealth is. I think he believes that government has to invest in key infrastructure, and there's probably a need in the nation now for more investment in infrastructure, but that the private sector also has a very important role to play there. So he doesn't have a strong ideological view one way or another, which means that he has no real base of support either on the conservative side or the liberal side. The conservatives would like him to be a disciple of Milton Friedman. Mm-hmm. The liberals would like him to be a true Keynesian. And the fact is that he's neither.
So if we should somehow, polls aside, end up with a President McCain, do you see him sort of breaking loose of Republican orthodoxy, stepping across the aisle as he has in some previous years to do big deals with the Democrats who are almost certain to have congressional majorities? Or do you see him more likely as the veto man, the, you know, throwing roadblocks down?
I think he'll veto pork barrel spending in a very consistent and vigorous way. Where he will spend, where he'll support spending, is when he's talked into believing that a certain kind of project, perhaps on a large scale, perhaps on smaller scales here and there, are truly in the national interest. He'll have to be persuaded that a particular proposal serves the national interest and not simply the interests of politicians, not the local congressman, not the two senators, but truly is in the national interest. Then he's going to be willing to spend. Again, you know, he's neither a strict conservative on economic matters nor a Keynesian liberal.
Alan Brinkley, can you see that pragmatist President McCain, such a president, breaking with the path we've been on, delivering something like significant change, or does that amount to hewing closer to where we've been?
Well, you know, my problem with Obama, whom I think is probably clear I support, is the things he hasn't said and the things he hasn't told us. But, of course, that's in the nature of campaigns, that, that candidates just don't spell out everything that they're thinking. They talk about the things that they will be helpful in the election. My problem with McCain is the things he does say. What he seems to be saying is, first of all, that the progressive tax system is socialism, that's wealth redistribution, which it is, of course, and always has been in a way, but we haven't really thought of it as something that was... it's certainly not socialism or anything close to it, but you know, the progressive tax system is what drives economies all over the world. And suddenly, the McCain campaign seems to be using the idea of a relatively modest tax increase on the upper levels as socialism. So that seems to me to predict a rather crabbed economic policy. If McCain actually means what he's been saying in the campaign, I think both of these men, in fact, have been running campaigns that are driven by the campaign and not by their core ideas. I hope that McCain, more than Obama, has been driven into this campaign not by his core ideas. I think both of them, you know, from what we know of them, will be relatively pragmatic. Both of them will be beholden to some degree to their political parties, which will push them in one direction or another. Both of them will be affected by what who's controlling the Congress and by what margin. So there are a lot of things that are going to determine what kind of president either Obama or McCain will be. It does look pretty likely that it'll be Obama. And I think Obama will be an effective, moderate leader of the Democratic Party.
When it comes to change, I don't hear you anticipating a great turnover, even though polls seem to indicate there's quite an appetite for it. And America's circumstances could easily be interpreted as saying we need a real turn of the wheel here. Maybe not.
Well, I think even a moderate policy would be a big change from what we've had over the last 8 years. And I think there are a lot of pragmatic things that that people in both parties would support that are non-ideological, that are extremely important to the health of the economy. I think the big liberal thing on the agenda is health care, but I think that's actually something that many people across the ideological spectrum are waiting for. Whether it's Obama's plan or some other plan, I don't know, but I think the healthcare plan, the healthcare system in this country is clearly broken. We have the greatest healthcare in the world and the worst distribution policy of any major country. And that's something that I think everybody wants to see changed.
Robert George, you've just got half a minute. If it is Obama, as the polls suggest, who knows? We'll see. The people will vote. But if it is, do you see the door closing on the era of the predominance of Reagan Republicanism, or some compromise with that sort of reigning philosophy of the last 20, 30 years?
Well, conservatives have, been too inclined to see the solution to everything as simply a restoration of Reaganism. Reagan's policies were policies for his day. I think the proper view a conservative should have is to be inspired by Reagan to deal today with the problems that we have. The world economy is different from what it was in Reagan's days. There are other differences. So I think this will give conservatives, if it does happen, an opportunity to think about what policies need to be in place today to be true to the founding principles of the country, which conservatives affirm, but which are designed and shaped in view of modern challenges and modern circumstances.
One more day and the vote will speak for itself. Robert George at Princeton University, Alan Brinkley at Columbia, thank you very much to each of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.